Hi, I'm David Reardon, and welcome to Integral Life. Today we are talking to Ian Lawton about the present and the future of Christianity. Ian is the executive minister and teacher for the C3 Exchange community in Grand Haven, Michigan. Growing up in Australia, Ian was drawn to the Christian faith at an early age, including profound experiences as a young man at Billy Graham events and Christian rock concerts. Ordained as an Anglican priest in the very conservative diocese of Sydney, Australia, Ian found himself questioning much of the traditional teachings of the church and eventually worked on Sydney's inner-city streets and saw the reality of human suffering firsthand. Ian's journey to the United States made a stop in Auckland, New Zealand first, where he was the vicar of St. Matthew in the city, before being convinced by Bishop John Shelby Spong to lead an emerging group of progressive Christians at the C3 Exchange. Welcome, Ian.
Great. Well, thanks, David. Good to be here with you.
Why don't we just start with your current activities and what you're doing and just a description of what your life is like in spirituality and Christianity today.
Interesting stages for me. I'm running an independent community in West Michigan. It's a very progressive, open-minded, diverse, kind of adventurous community in a really conservative area. So it's a fascinating phenomenon that we can survive in this area, let alone thrive. And it's a community that grew out of the Reformed Church. My predecessor was there for over 30 years. He was a firebrand, hell and brimstone preacher back in the, in the 60s and 70s. Became more liberal towards the end of his career, and the community moved with him. So he began the conveyor belt. They made contact with me in around about 2002, maybe, and said, look, this guy's been here a long time. He's going to retire. We're looking to take the next steps. We're looking for the person to do that, and they were put in touch with me by Bishop Spong. So we kind of started a dialogue between us that went for a couple of years before we moved here. Moved here in 2004 and took up the challenge of moving this community forward. The community became independent in 1997. So a long, long story short was basically that over the question of being inclusive, and particularly they wanted to welcome gay and lesbian people, and a gay and lesbian group wanted to run a small gathering within the building, and the Reformed Church said no to that, and Christ Community Church, as it was called then, said, well, we want to do it, so we're going to become independent. So that was kind of the short story of the history of the place. I've been here now for 7 years, and we've gone from one level of inclusiveness to another. Really interesting journey, and actually as we speak, would you believe, at this very moment as we speak, there are trucks lined up at the church, cherry pickers, removing the large cross that hangs at the front of the church. So, if you understand how conservative this local community is, this is probably equivalent to the Berlin Wall coming down. This is huge. This is traumatic for some people and very exciting for some other people. So basically, where we are right now as a community, we're a group of about 300, 350 people in West Michigan. We gather once a week. We do something that looks very much like church in many ways. I feel that the conveyor belt is an accurate description of what we're doing together as a community. We have a really open dialogue that takes place. A number of social programs we're involved in together. Very practical, very loving group of people, and an intelligent group of people. So this cross coming down today is kind of symbolic of the next step of inclusion. And we see this as taking the cross down, in other words, catching up to where the community already is in terms of inclusion. In other words, we're a community that includes people of all spiritual traditions, no spiritual tradition, people who are spiritual but not religious, people who never thought they'd go to church, people who've been to church all their life. It's just a huge cross-section in our community. And the cross just wasn't broad enough a symbol to capture the spirit of our community. So that's kind of a brief introduction to where we're at. But it is an interesting day. There's energy swirling around me even as we speak, kind of nervous energy and excitement around these changes.
I want to go back to how that all came about, but there's some other things that you're doing as well. You have some communities online. You're using websites to actually gather community and particular communities online that we're really interested in. So could you talk a little bit about that work?
I guess you could say I'm either very courageous or really stupid, because most pastors that I talk to who are on the liberal end of things tell me that they privately are very open and progressive, but in public they toe a line, and they do that so that they can save their careers and their salaries. And I can fully understand where they're coming from, but for whatever reason, I've never been able to live that way. I've never been able to live that type of double life. So I guess what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years is I've been putting my ideas out, and in the early days in the most simple form online, and then more recently through some e-courses and some other forums, that maybe what happens is that I'm such a rare commodity in the progressive world of someone who's actually prepared to say exactly what I'm thinking, not so much what I know, but what questions I'm asking and what I'm wondering about. It's such a rare thing that I'm finding that people all over the world are kind of resonating with that, making contact with me, and wanting to know how they can be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen some online communities spring up because of that, and I suspect the reason for that is because there's very few churches that people can find where there's that level of honest, open inquiry. So yeah, we've got some satellite groups that meet in other parts of Michigan, down in Florida, in areas where people just can't find a church, but they still want to be connected to their tradition and an inquiring open community. So, yeah, there's certainly some interesting social dynamics taking place, and the internet opens up a whole new world for that.
You've already laid the groundwork for me to ask you the question about your own spiritual journey, because already in what you've said, you are actually pushing the envelope in this area. So let's start with this question about what was your first memory when and where were you and what was happening in terms of sensing that there might be something larger than just yourself?
I grew up in an Anglican rectory. My dad's an Anglican priest, and I am also what's known in America as Episcopalian. So I grew up in the church, literally, and very familiar and comfortable with nominal, which is usually the case with Anglicanism, nominal Christian language. It's a pretty open denomination relative to others. My parents were very open and liberal and encouraged all of us as kids to think for ourselves. Every 3 or 4 years, Billy Graham would come to Sydney where I grew up, and I'd always go, and I'd always get converted time and time again. I'd go down the front, and I don't know exactly what it was. There was a sense of, as you said, of being part of some huge collective energy, something that was drawing me in ways I couldn't fully describe.
Yeah.
And the fact that I couldn't fully describe them meant that I had to do something. And so getting up and walking down the front, which is what the call was a symbolic act that replaced the words.
Did you go by yourself, or did you go with your family? And how old were you when this was happening?
You know, the first time, I must have been quite young the first time, maybe 8 or 10. And I definitely would have been with my family at that age, but I seem to remember maybe being 14 and 15 and going with another group of kids and surprising myself that the exact same thing was happening, because when we arrived, I said to my friends, look, you know, last time I was here, this is what happened to me, as if, you know, I'm already done. And it just happened again. So each time I did that, I would go home passionate, fired up to be a better Christian. And that was the language that I used at the time. So I would set about reading my Bible and having daily devotions, getting involved in my church, you know, being mindful about the way I live, and even as a 10-year-old, being quite responsible about that. Something very real happened to me when I went to these Billy Graham crusades.
And I'm hearing different than, say, your church experience with your parents. I mean, I'm assuming there was another church when Billy Graham wasn't in town. Can you talk a little bit about what it actually was? What was happening there? You said something about it, massive collective energy was certainly we notice about those big gatherings. How did it feel to you? Do you remember?
The one that I can remember really clearly was actually another experience, but I think it was in the same vein. When I was about 18, I went to a Christian rock concert. An American singer, his name was Larry Norman. And I went mainly because my brother-in-law was playing in his band. So, you know, I had family reason to be there. Going through a fairly cynical stage in my life at the time, just finishing school, fairly self-preoccupied, etc. I'm sitting in this rock concert with my sister and just a couple of other people, and had what was definitely a completely indescribable experience, almost out-of-body experience as an 18-year-old. So I was sitting there and waves of shivers and sweats and shakes just went right through my body. And for a period, what felt like minutes, it was probably only seconds, but what felt like minutes, I had just an overwhelming experience of just about every emotion that I was aware of, ranging from shame through to exhilaration, excitement, passion, so many different emotions and experiences. I didn't tell anyone. I had this moment. It was very much a bodily experience. Didn't tell anyone about it. I don't even know why I didn't tell anyone. The next morning, I was sitting at the breakfast table having breakfast with my sister, and she turned to me. We weren't even talking. She turned to me and said, "You've changed." I looked back at her and I said, "I knew I had, but I hadn't told her." And I just thought that was so incredible that she'd seen something. She'd somehow tapped into that experience that I'd had. Now, at the time, this was the thing that was really interesting to me looking back, was at the time, I put the only language that I had around that experience. And I think I did the same thing with all the Billy Graham conversions. The only language I had to describe what happened was the evangelical Christian language of my culture. So I decided that I'd been converted. I decided that Jesus had, in some sense, come into my heart and that I was giving my life to the Lord and that, you know, I'd become righteous. And the only language I had, I kind of decided that's what it was. As time went on and as my theology began to change and grow, I often look back on those experiences and wondered, what do I do with them? You know, I don't really believe in conversions and Jesus in the heart, and, you know, my theology is so different now, but still it was a real experience. So I found myself looking at the language that I used for it and looking for ways to describe the experience that honored where I was at the time but didn't limit where I was. And that was probably the most important thing, was that the only language I had at that time turned out to be limiting to me at a later time.
Right.
I needed some broader language. I needed to see this experience as part of, you know, a collective energy. I needed to see myself as part of a broad sweep of history and evolution. And now the evolutionary story gave me a whole new set of words to describe what was obviously a very profound experience. Now, when I was 18 and I had that experience, my life did actually change. I became almost a completely different person almost immediately. People gave me that feedback for quite some time. I had an incredible lightness about me. Things were easy for me, at least for a while. I didn't need to struggle. Things fell into my lap. The right situation seemed to arise. My life was just more joyful than it had been for a long time. So my life did change, and I also became very passionate about making a difference in the world and got involved in some street ministries.
So was that the next step for you? Was the street ministry sort of how that eventually enacted itself?
You know, if the rock concert experience was the moment of great faith, then the next experience for me after probably about 2 years of exhilaration and joy was an experience of great doubt. What happened was I decided I wanted to do street ministry. I was getting involved with, you know, kind of a bus that would go around town and pick up homeless people. I talked to my youth group leaders at the evangelical church about this, and they told me that I was wasting my time. They basically said to me, there's no point helping these homeless people physically if their souls are not right. And I was so shocked by that comment that it really led me into a period of great doubt. And that was the beginning for me of questioning the language, not the experience, but questioning the language that I'd wrapped around my experience. Because for me, as a 20-year-old, it didn't make any sense whatsoever to me to separate the body from the soul. That was just unthinkable, that there was a difference in helping a homeless person physically from being involved with their soul. So that was the beginning for me of questioning mainstream Christianity. And you know, that's over 20 years ago now, and it's been 20 years of movement in that regard.
So that's interesting, because there's a classic moment of doubt that follows the euphoria. Once that questioning sort of came online for you, then how did you sort that out to where you may have felt the patterns rectify itself or at least be a little bit more solid, I guess, is what I'm looking for?
I chose a tough road. I decided to carry on into Anglican ministry. So I went into seminary when I was 21, got married when I was 22, kind of set myself on a very responsible track, but also one where I was putting myself in the middle of what was always going to be a storm. I mean, my doubt escalated very quickly or spiraled very quickly, and most of the orthodox beliefs of Christianity were unbelievable to me very early on. But I decided to go into Anglican ministry anyway in a very conservative climate, probably the most conservative seminary in the world. Found my way through that somehow, miraculously. Found my way through that. They had an annual inquisition where they questioned me on my theology, but they just never seemed to ask the right questions. And the sort of things they asked, I don't know, maybe they didn't want to catch me out. I don't know what it was. But basically, we kind of got on pretty well, and I got through 4 years of that. I was then put in my first parish, and it only took about 6 months in my first parish for there to be a major storm. As soon as I began teaching regularly, running small groups, there were just constant clashes with evangelical Christians. And it became clear within 6 months that I needed to find some other path. So I met with the Archbishop of Sydney, who said to me, "Have you ever thought about leaving Sydney?" Which felt to me like I was being exiled. He was right. It was the right thing to do. So very early on, as a family, I had two young children at that point, decided to leave Sydney and go in search of a more open community, and went to Auckland, New Zealand, and we discovered that, once again, in the Anglican Church, a very, very open-minded, progressive, socially radical community in downtown Auckland. We were there for 3 or 4 years, had a great time, and then the move to West Michigan. So that's kind of been the journey of that. But yeah, I guess because I put myself in onto that particular track, it meant that I had to do the personal work of translating what had taken place for me kind of on the run. I didn't have a lot of time or the luxury of privacy to do that thinking by myself. I had to do that in community. And actually, looking back, I would say that's been part of what's unique in what I can offer, is that I'm prepared to think out loud about some of those things. And, of course, you know what happens. When you think out loud about that, you find other people have had very similar experiences. So, yeah, I guess that would be one of the marks of communities that I've run, is that, you know, it's been a great place to ask questions. Good company, open, accepting sort of a place. So I credit that, particularly the two communities I've been part of in Auckland and in West Michigan, both communities have been really influential in helping me to understand my life and my place in the world. The first time I'd heard of Ken Wilber was I was introduced to his work in the community in West Michigan when I first arrived. So, you know, I thank the people for that and for many other great spiritual leaders of our time. I was introduced to Genpo Roshi around about the same time and became a student of Genpo's, and he trained me to facilitate the Big Mind process, which I now use in community here. Each step has led to more and more possibility, more and more inspiration, and the community's been there every step of the way.
Yeah. So we talk about the Ken moment when each of us finds him. What was your first thought about when you looked at an integral worldview in the way that Ken was talking about it? Did it help you sort out some things at that point that were useful to you?
Yes. For me, it was the coupling of Ken and Genpo. I don't think I could separate the two of them. I was introduced to Genpo at an integral conference in Boulder, and I've had a lot more to do with Genpo since. But it was Ken who impacted my head and Genpo who impacted my heart, and it was the combination of those two things that was really transformative. You know, I don't know if this is the first experience I had of Ken, but the one that stands out for me was when I was in Boulder for a week-long conference. He was not able to be there because of his health at the time, but we had a phone conference, and people got to ask questions of him over the phone. I had the chance to ask him. I kind of gave him a brief summary of what I was doing with my life. And my question was, do I stay within the Christian tradition? You know, as someone who's kind of questioned just about everything within Orthodox Christianity, do I stay within it or do I move outside of it? And he gave me the same answer that Genpo Roshi gave me later, which is, yes, stay in it and be part of building a bridge for people, because obviously Christianity is the, you know, the default language and tradition of the West. So help people discover transformation in their lives using Christian language. And that was good advice. It was it was very profound for me to hear what I suspected that he was going to say to me, but to hear those words from him was really helpful for me. So each time that happens, I come back to the community and I say, look, you know, the great leaders of our time are telling me we should stay within Christianity. And for years, that was certainly the path that I took, but not so much now. Things are really changing for me now.